have not now.
No. It's worth it. Obviously, as a how have you lived there your whole life?
No, I actually grew up in New Jersey. Went to school out in Ohio and just moved when I was done with that.
Yeah, man, the Arnold is, I mean, it obviously you get some really unique people. It's very, I mean, for me, it was very inspirational for many years, man. It was very aspirational for me to get there, and a lot of really good athletes going through there. Not just bodybuilders, but a lot of great athletes. I actually prefer the Arnold to the Olympia, like by far, I would say. Yeah. Yeah, we're checking out, man.
Sure
Thompson
thing.
King. Thompson King is in the house, the first official Muscle Intelligence call. Thompson, I know you got your video off there, man, but I see you.
Hello, how you doing?
What's up, buddy?
Okay,
We got a small group today. I'm not sure why. We'll give it a few more minutes, let the stragglers come in. Gents, if you can always have your videos on, it's always appreciated. If you can't, then that's okay too. I appreciate you guys always making your best effort. So one of the things that came up for me today, or at least over the last week, as I so many of you guys may or may not know, we're always trying to build content that is useful, right? Relevant. And I think information is no longer valuable, right? Information is everywhere. You go on ChatGPT, you go on Google, get information, but what's useful is insight. And insight always has context, which means, it's going to be information that's applicable to you. And so when we sit and talk about information and content with respect to whether it be building a better body or building a better mind or building a better life, then all this content has to be passed through the lens of the question that I constantly ask is, so why do I care? So information that gets thrown at you and spewed at you from all over the corners of the internet every day, you have to learn to create a lens through which you filter all of the information. And it's interesting to think about, all of the sound bites that we are constantly being bombarded with. And you take these things in and you go, well, is this useful for me right now in this exact circumstance that I'm in? And so what I encourage you guys to think about is any information that you receive, whether it be from myself, my team, or literally anyone on the internet, ask yourself, what's the source of this information? Meaning, kind of think of like source code, right? So when someone is spewing information, they're often just regurgitating someone else's soundbite, or they're regurgitating a snippet of someone else's longer, segment. And so my encouragement to you is to start applying critical thinking to everything you do, because most people, when they talk, have a bias. Most people talk have an agenda, and they're trying to get you to buy something or follow them or engage with them or listen. And so we're just being bombarded constantly with these clickbaity type bits of information that are effectively useless. And they loop us in, they lure us in. And what happens is we get these little spurts of dopamine, like, oh, I'm doing something productive for myself. I'm doing something useful for myself. When in reality, you're just distracting yourself. You're just avoiding, ultimately distracting yourself from what you should be doing, which is ultimately moving in the direction of your goals. So today's talk is meant to be about this exploration that I've been doing lately around stress. So what precipitated this was I'm writing a course right now on recovery, understanding recovery at a really deep level. Because if you guys have ever heard me speak on the exercise equation, what the exercise equation is, and if you're writing things down, this is one of the most useful things you're ever going to learn. Actually, and this is my equation. Nobody taught me this. So the exercise equation is an external signal plus an internal response plus an adaptation equals a result. And I'll explain all these details for you. So an external signal is exercise, right? Exercise is an external means of exerting force against the body. that elicits an internal response to that force. And that internal response is muscle contraction, right? And that muscle contraction creates some type of physiological or biochemical response. So I'm lifting this weight, I'm putting a resistance against my body, and there's kind of two measures of that resistance, right? It's amplitude and duration. So how big is the stimulus and how long is the stimulus? And so that stimulus ex elicits a response in my body, meaning the body goes, I have to push back against this thing. And the amount, again, also internally, amplitude and duration inside the body, how hard of muscle contraction, how long does it stick around? And so that's the exercise half of the equation, right? And so I always say exercise exists in two places. They exist outside the body and exist inside the body. And when you start to learn how to overlap those things, you can create an effective exercise experience. So when I'm looking at exercises outside of the body, I'm saying, well, how is this imparting force against my body? What's the direction of the force? What's the amplitude of the force? And then how can I most effectively make my body oppose that resistance or oppose that force? So I just wanted to start with that, but that's not the point of today's call. The point of today's call is the third part of the equation. It's this adaptation piece. And so when we talk about adaptation is our limitation, right? The goal of exercise is not to train. The goal of exercise is to adapt. And so when we start looking at, well, what is it? What is adaptation? What does that really look like? It's really your body's ability to be resilient to stress. Your body's ability, actually, the more accurate word is anti-fragile, right? So resilience and anti-fragile can be often interchanged. Anti-fragile specifically, if you think of something that's fragile, when you apply a little bit of pressure against it, it breaks. And something that's anti-fragile, you apply a little pressure against it and it gets stronger. And so we want ultimately to generate and create these anti-fragile systems. And so to do that, we must allow our body to be adaptive to stress. Stress, gentlemen, is a great thing. It's not just a good thing, it's a great thing. It's a necessary part of life. At one point in my life, I desired a life that was free of stress. Has anyone else ever thought, like, hey, I'd like a life free of stress? It sounds like a desirable thing, but I guarantee if you had a life free of stress, you would find a way to create some stress. You'd find a way to create drama. You'd find a way to create something in your life that was in some way stressful, whether positive or negative, it would be stressful. So, point being, stress is inevitable. How we tolerate stress is something that's well within the grasp of our control, actually at a very deep level. Now, stress should be construed as existing in two places also, right? Stress exists in the mind and stress exists in the body. Can you guys all think of times when you experienced psychological stress? And do you notice, I'm sure, how that's coupled almost always with physiological response from the neck down, a body response as well, right? An embodiment. So we have these stress existing both in the mind and in the body. And we have to say, okay, well, these two things are inextricably linked. You can't separate the mind and body. So when my mind is stressed, my body is stressed. When my body is stressed, my mind is also stressed. You can't separate these things. So many people, when they think of stress, they think it's purely a psychological affliction. It's not. It's both physiological and psychological, right? Neck up and neck down. So what often happens when we're feeling psychologically stressed, can each of you think of what you do? We all have some strategy to get us out of stress. Humans develop these coping mechanisms, right? We develop these coping strategies that allow us to get out of stress. You guys mostly think of like, hey, this is usually what I do when I'm stressed. Some people eat, some people don't eat. Some people drink, some people, I don't know, exercise. Some people use their phone to distract them. Some people use social media. Some people use work to distract them. Some people use pornography. Some people use drugs. Right. So we have these positive and negative coping strategies. Does everybody follow me? Okay. In an ideal world, it's always at your fingertips to realize, regardless of the habits you've created up to this point, there's an opportunity for you to interject every single time you feel stress and create a positive coping strategy, a coping strategy that not only makes you feel good in this moment, but also positively contributes to your long-term well-being. And so this week, this article that I wrote has about 24, 25 now. There's some little things being added. You guys, if you're in the group, you may have seen me throw this in there a couple of days ago. But there's probably 24 or 25 positive coping strategies that we can use to intervene, where instead in the past, maybe we use negative things, right? So in the past, if we would use sugar or alcohol or social media or email or work to distract ourselves, now we can start creating positive interventions or positive interactions that allow us to not only feel better now, but also positively contribute to our long-term betterment. Now, I'll walk through those on this call. I'll share the list with you guys. If you're in the Telegram group, it's already in there. But the first and most important thing that I think is just missing in most people's lives, and this is where I'm going to kind of pause, take a break, and ask some questions, is very, very clear goals. Now, goals that you're committed to, right? Why are goals and commitments the fastest way out of stress? While goals and commitments can also add stress, what they do is they add direction or trajectory. And so when I have a goal or an outcome that's a desired outcome, it pushes off the reward into the future. So it makes pain, it makes not pain, effort, feel useful. It makes going through the discomfort, bearable. And this is also then where you get into this conversation on having a goal and a why. Because when your why is big enough, you guys have all heard that you can endure almost anyhow, right? If I know why I've started this goal and why it's really important to me, everything is easier. So that also then adds to the next document that I added into the group today. So one was yesterday, one was today. If you guys aren't reading the Telegram group, go look at those, not now, but when we're done. So yesterday I added in these 23 or 24 things, which has obviously since grown to 25, I think. Action items. So like, boom, here's things I can do right now that are going to make me positively more adaptive to stress. Why do I want to be more adaptive to stress? Because exercise is stress. The more adaptive I am to exercise, the better I'm going to grow, the faster I'm going to adapt, the less life is going to bring me down. And the next part of it was this question of why do I train every day? So I'm going to walk you guys through this stuff. I'll pause here in a moment. So I'll do a little screen share. Here we go. All right, so here's my 25 positive stress interventions that allow me to build my resilience to stress or my anti-fragility to stress. And if you guys can't see these for any reason, remember they're in the Telegram group. So these will improve my resilience to stress. Think of it like making your elastic band more tolerant to being stretched. Right? If you get this really weak, thin elastic band, it's going to snap. You're trying to make that elastic band so big that no matter what you're subjected to, you're like, I got this, man. I got this. Not only do I have the physiological and psychological resilience, I've started to develop the belief in myself that I can do it. And so stress is a good thing, gentlemen, when we can adapt to it. If we can't adapt to it, stress will crush us. Stress starts to create anxiety. Starts to create the lack of self-belief. It starts to create fear, a life driven by fear. So some of these I highlighted, and you'll notice that, and I'll tell you why I highlighted those. So the first one is I make sure I have clear goals, targets, and timelines that I lean into even more. When I'm stressed, I stop, I reassess, and I go, am I clear on my goals, my targets, and my timelines? Goals and targets obviously being interchangeable, and timelines. And then I start getting into the physiological things. Like I want to exercise first thing in the morning. I can give you reasons. I want to make sure I'm getting sunlight as best I can in the morning. I think when you're stressed, coffee's a good thing because stress tends to deplete energy. So coffee's not a bad thing as long as it's not after 1 p.m. By the way, coffee is not unhealthy. Coffee's, I think it's actually a health food, which is counterintuitive for most people. And if you guys have questions about that, I can speak to it. I suggest you overhydrate. I personally drink 4 to 5 liters a day with electrolytes. Don't be afraid of salt. I eat 80% of my calories before 2 p.m. Now, right now, it's probably closer to 3 p.m. But in general, when I'm super stressed, I front load my calories. Because what you guys will notice is when you're front loading, or excuse me, when you're stressed, most people tend to overeat. They tend to binge eat, or they tend to eat bad foods. By eating more food early in the day, not only do you improve your sleep at night, but you also decrease the likelihood of binge eating bad foods, which, many people do when they're stressed. I improve the way I eat. I eat more antioxidant-rich foods like vegetables and berries. I walk more. I take more walking meetings. So 10,000 steps is non-negotiable when I'm stressed. I journal. Again, I'm not going to read all the details. Number 11 is important. I measure my HRV, my resting heart rate, my respiration rate, and my blood pressure daily. And these are objective measures of stress. I intentionally slow down my breathing. How many of you in the last 30 days have experienced some type of physiological stress or anxiety that you wanted to get the fuck out of in that moment? Put your hand up. Anybody? True fact, I experienced it last night. Last night, for some reason, I woke up in the middle of the night and I was just like anxious, stressed. It doesn't happen often, but it happened last night. It's keeping me awake. I felt wide awake. It's probably 2 in the morning. And so I went straight into a 4-4 box breath. 4 seconds in, 4 seconds hold, 4 seconds out. 4 seconds hold. That's the single best way that we know right now to drop your heart rate. So a 4-4 box breath for me, for you, it may be a 3-3 box breath or a 5-5, depending how tolerant you are, will drop your heart rate faster than anything. I was sleeping within probably 5 minutes again. Anyways, moving on, I tend to remove social media when I'm stressed because I know it's so easy to mute my emotions and dive into it and look for that hedonistic release, right? Which is the alcohol, the drugs, even television, pornography. These are the things that are just going to mute our stress. Like, oh, I feel good for the moment, but then when you're done, you feel down, you feel worse. You get in this big rut. I ensure my testosterone levels is at a peak. So I take supplemental testosterone to make sure I don't miss my testosterone. Did you know that low testosterone actually leads to anxiety, or is one of the causes of anxiety, is having low testosterone? Obviously, sex helps reduce stress. I double down on my schedule. I make sure that I'm keeping things tight and I'm moving in the direction of my goals. I do more cardiovascular training, cold plunges and cold showers, saunas, meditation, and prayer. I really like number 20, meditation, prayer, connecting to a higher power, a higher purpose. And I'm not sure how that resonates with you guys, but I'm happy. I'd love to talk more about that. Yoga, supplementation, specifically with magnesium. Some people ask, is there other supplements we can take? The answer is yes. And you can ask those case by case. I also make a rule that there's no big decisions when I'm in a high stress environment. I do something fulfilling, which is, for me, hanging out with my family, hanging out with my friends, helping others, hikes, bikes, and completing a big project. And the last one is spend time with the people I love most. So I didn't plan on reading that on this call because I know it's a bit boring for me to sit here and read, but I thought I'd rip through it. And just so you guys know, those resources have also been placed into True Coach, not True Coach, Telegram for you guys to view. Who hath questions thus far? So I can stop my rambling.
I wanted to touch on the information part right at the start, Ben. I didn't want to interrupt you. I've kind of been a victim of this throughout the years, as I've been a professional poker player for the last 15 years, and trying to get like coaching, going down different avenues of coaching, and all this conflicting information that's just it's not really accurate. It's just those snippets that you're talking about. And then once I got into another sport, or another hobby, which was golf, was exactly the same thing. Lots of conflict and information until I found someone that I actually trusted to actually give me the information that I wanted. And kind of this is what led me to muscle intelligence. I've watched enough podcasts, I've watched enough people to realize that like who to trust and who to take their word for. And that's kind of where I've came at the conclusion, is finding someone that you trust and kind of follow their information. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
So one of the values that we really lean into at Muscle Intelligence with the coaches is this idea of authentically care. And so I think when you know that the person who's standing in front of you actually gives a shit about you, rather than their own agenda or their own pocket, it changes the information, right? Because at very least, you know they have good intentions. They may not have the best information, but at the very least, you know they have good intentions. And that's really important. And I think so we layer that in as a foundational. Like, I don't hire people who don't love coaching people, who don't love people. And that's a big part of who we are. And so my encouragement is always just be aware of like, what's their agenda? And that's the idea of like, what's the source of their information? Why are they doing this? Why are they sharing this information? It's important. And knowing what someone's motive is behind the information, right? Because most people now, as you know, are just trying to get likes. They're just trying to get in for, they're trying to like regurgitate. Man, the thing that drove me nuts in the last couple of weeks is people jumping on, like capitalizing on other people's challenges. For example, Andrew Huberman, most of you guys have probably heard this shit that's going around the internet right now. Like he broke up with a girlfriend. He was sleeping with a bunch of girls. He's getting shit on because he's, such a bad dude. And it's not the fact that the article was written. It's the fact that I've seen 30 people who are like YouTube people, Instagram people, trying to capitalize on the fact that he's Andrew Huberman, and I'm gonna talk bad about him. I'm like, people are just scum, man. Like shitty human beings, just trying to make money, just trying to become famous at someone else's expense. Like, I just fucking don't agree with that shit.
And I
Anyways.
feel like when you also find the right person as well, like I'm working with Coach Andrew, and he's been great so far. And just having the confidence to execute on what you're being told is a massive thing for me as well. Like he's given me two or three books to read, and I've been engrossed in these books because he's pointing me down the right. Well, I have the confidence in him that he's pointing me down the right avenue, so it's a lot easier to execute when given these.
100%. Are you still playing poker? I used to coach one of the guys. I don't know if he won the World Series or got second in the World Series a couple years ago. I could tell you his study regimen was insane. I could tell you exactly what he did. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen. He was obsessed. Obsessively committed. And with, I have nothing wrong with obsession. I think obsession is a great thing, but he was like borderline obsessive to where it was like negatively impacting his life. But man, that guy studied poker. He'd wake up every day at 3, study poker till 8, then play games. Like he was crazy.
There's a ton of like well, there's a lot of like software now, like pile solvers and all these kind of things, and this is like the mathematical side of things as well. And I went down that route for a while, and I kind of noticed it was detrimental towards my game just because I kind of lost like the actual connection I had to the game and like the feel aspect of it. It was just kind of like all numbers, and I wasn't actually like reacting to the human that I was playing,
Emotion.
or
Yeah.
and that was kind of a wrong avenue that I took until I kind of cut it back a little bit, and then kind of went down a different route.
Man, I think there's levels to everything, right? Like, and everyone's got a different style game. You find that person that you attach to, you're like, hey, I like this guy's style, and I'm gonna go with it. So, like everyone plays so differently. Daniel Negreanu now has like a master class. I'm sure he doesn't teach a lot on there, but I'm sure he's got a unique approach. I'm sure Phil Ivey's got a unique approach. I know this guy that I was working with, his approach is extremely unique. I'm sure he makes very good money, does really, really well. So, man, who knows? Don't know if I answered your question directly, Des, but anyone else have some questions? So, does everyone understand stress? So, I'm going to walk you through like a simple framework for stress. So, as I said, stress is a part of life. Stress is a system that exists in the body that's adaptive. which basically means when I experience something that requires additional energy or focus, my body ramps up stress. I was thinking about this actually. I think I was reading about this the other day. Think about this. If anyone on here, like a skier or maybe a downhill mountain biker or something, something that requires like huge amounts of, let's say we're standing at the top of a double black diamond about to go down, like a crazy ski hill, and your body didn't amplify stress. You kind of went down, like you're like, oh, I just woke up in the morning. I'm like, oh, my eyes are kind of asleep and full, you know, like what would happen? You would die. So stress is this thing where you're standing at the top of a double black diamond. Your body ramps up the appropriate amount of arousal to make sure you're focused. If you've ever done mountain biking, like mountain biking for me is one of the most focused things I've ever done, because you're just like, I'm either going to hit a tree, or I'm going to die, or I'm going to go off a cliff, or I'm going to make it, and I have to be so vigilant. And so the body ramps up stress. And now it's interesting. I was explaining this to my daughter yesterday, 2 days ago. You're standing at the top of double black diamond. One person experiences excitement. One person experiences anxiety. Same feeling. What's the difference? Do you know, excitement and anxiety is the same feeling. What's or nervousness, you know, is the same feeling as excitement. What's the difference? Level of preparedness. We both stand, two of us stand at the top of a double black diamond. One person feels anxious and nervous. The other person feels excited. Exact same feeling in the body. The person who's excited just feels prepared. They know I've done this before. They know that they have the skill set. I'm like, I'm good. Same feeling, same physiological level of arousal. So one is empowering, one is disempowering. The only difference is your level of preparedness. So when you feel that anxiety, when you feel that worry, when you feel that fear, it's just a signal that you don't feel prepared yet. So you're like, okay, I need to lean into preparation. I need to lean into my habits. I need to lean into my protocol, my plan, and make sure that I continue to prepare myself, rather than just you know, quitting. Because if you quit, you don't become more prepared, and you'll always become a victim to the fear, right? So in those moments of fear, in those moments of anxiety, in those moments of worry, or whatever what nervousness looks like, the key is I'm just going to lean into what I know to be my practices that will make me more prepared. Thought that was a very useful framework. So Thompson, thinking of you in Marbella, I'm sure there was moments of fear. I'm sure there was moments of like, oh fuck, I'm nervous. What am I getting myself into? And you know, hopefully we gave you the confidence to know you're in a safe environment, and like let's get you more prepared so that next time you come back, you're still going to feel nervous, but you're going to be more prepared. You're like, okay, I got this, right? And every time you do it, you become more and more prepared.
There were points at which I was like, I've just stopped thinking about it and just do it, right?
Totally. Yeah.
You know, I was in with a bunch of you guys, the coaches, etc. You guys created a really safe environment for us, and I just let go of thinking about it, because
Right.
thinking more about it wasn't actually going to help. So I
Yeah.
just trusted in the process.
Trust the environment. But sometimes you may get yourself into an environment where you're like, I don't have the ability to trust this. So you have to be able to navigate it mentally and say, hey, you know, is this anxiety? Is this worry? Is this nervousness? Do I have the physical preparation or the skill to do this? And if I don't, okay, it's okay. I'm still going to move forward. I'm just going to make sure that I'm cautious, you know. Josh, I saw you on mute. Do you want to ask a question? Josh Berner.
Thanks, Ben. No, I didn't have anything for you. That was my 3-year-old grabbing the phone.
Hello, little human.
That's
Welcome
right.
to the call. Yeah, so man, stress to me, guys, is just such a beautiful gift. And I think oftentimes we're told that, you know, stress is bad, or we've never been given the skills. And by the way, if anyone's a parent, I think one of the most useful things you can do for your children is give them the skills, the positive constructive habits on how to manage stress. How this is an interesting question. How many parents have ever been mad at their child for having an emotional outburst, not being able to control their emotions? You guys ever see that happen, or maybe you did it yourself? Now, I throw the question back. How many adults do you know that have the ability to control their emotions? And people shit on little kids because, like, that kid can't control his emotions. He's having an emotional outburst. I'm like, dude, 95% or more of the adults I know don't know how to control their emotions. So how can you expect a child who's never been taught the skills to understand how to control their emotions? So as parents, one of our greatest opportunities is not to condemn emotions, but to help a child understand emotions and navigate emotions and maybe learn how to work with them and ultimately become more resilient to those emotions, right? We become comfortable with our emotions. Like, oh yeah, that's what that means. Like we put meaning on it, or we put meaning on it and we're like, oh, that's all that means. And that's not a bad thing. It just is, right? Anger is not a bad emotion. I think, I don't know if you guys ever hear me just talk about this. I grew up believing that I was a bad person. Like it was the meaning I created for myself because I had so much anger and rage and I wanted to hurt people. And I thought that meant I was a bad person. I grew up in the Catholic Church, which said, like, you can't hurt anybody, you can't be mean to everybody, anger is a bad thing. And I just was angry all the time and I wanted to hurt people. And I just thought I was a bad person. So I became very quiet and recluse. And so what I learned in my probably early to mid-20s was my anger was my gift. That was my fire, that was my passion, that was my drive, you know. I have a gear that most people will never understand in their life but I learned how to harness it. And I think every one of you guys has that gear, but at some point in your young life, you're told that, hey, don't do that. Be a good boy, right? Listen to the rules, stay inside the lines. Don't color outside the lines. And we learn very quickly that you can't act out, man. You're going to get in trouble. Yeah, don't do that. Like, fuck that. Like, break down the wall. Mazza, I see your question. Not sure how I can get. Mats asked, could I shed some light on how inability to manage stress impacts nutrition, specifically assimilation absorption? Sure. Man, on so many levels. So first, when we become stressed all the time or any time, the body will release cortisol. That's good. Like, stress is mobilizing energy. Cortisol is just a mobilization hormone. It's just going to mobilize energy. It's going to mobilize fat. It's going to mobilize sugar. It's going to mobilize proteins, all of it. So the higher my stress goes, the more the body dumps all those nutrients into the bloodstream. Now, that sounds like a great thing. Like, oh, great, I'm going to burn more nutrients. Yeah, but when they're chronically released because you're always stressed, then the body actually becomes resistant to those nutrients, resistance to insulin. They becomes resistant to cortisol as well. So then when you need it, you don't have it. That's one thing that happens. So your body becomes resistant to these nutrients because of chronically elevated stress. The second thing that happens is, if you could imagine that there's a saber-toothed tiger trying to get me, the last priority in the world is my body doesn't want to digest food at that time. The body shuts down digestion and it starts mobilizing blood into the extremities to fight or run away, right? So if I'm stressed, digestion doesn't happen. So how many of you guys in the last 30 days have had meals in a hypersympathetic state, meaning a stress state? You're eating in a rush. I'm like, I can barely breathing. I can't think. I'm shoving down calories because I think it's what I need. And your body's not assimilating it. So what will happen is your body will, you'll basically have a leaky gut. You're very likely to have a leaky gut. Stress massively drives up leaky gut. And when you eat something, when you have leaky gut, everything causes inflammation. Literally, I was talking to my client earlier today. He's got leaky gut. I was like, dude, he's like, I'm always sore. I'm like, yeah, it's not because you're training, man. It's not because you're old. It's because you have a leaky gut. And until you fix it, you stop drinking alcohol, you're always going to have a leaky gut and you're always going to be inflamed. So your brain's going to feel foggy. You're going to lack energy. Joints are going to hurt because it's just chronic inflammation. So I don't know if you guys kind of followed that loop there, but stress causes leaky gut. And literally, you could eat the best foods in the world. You can eat chicken, broccoli, and whatever, arugula. And you're still going to get inflammation from those amazing foods. So you got to heal the gut. You got to remove the thing that's causing the leaky gut, which is often stress, alcohol, pharmaceuticals, gluten, things like that. They're going to drive up leaky gut. So that's how you'll negatively impact absorption, assimilation. Because if you have leaky gut, the body's just allowing these things through the gut, and your body then doesn't want to digest, absorb, assimilate anything really well. That's why a lot of people who have chronic stress get like diarrhea, get gas, bloating, digestion just disrupted. Guys, if you ever have gas, bloating, gas is not normal, by the way. Gas, bloating, diarrhea, you have gut issues. You may not have leaky gut, but you may have SIBO, you may have something. So definitely talk to us and let us support you on that. So here's the thing. We're all stressed, right? I see you guys sitting there go, what do I do about this? Look at the list. Pick one, pick two, pick five, and just implement them as daily habits. So I put those 25 things there for you and for our coaches to support you guys on, hey, pick a couple of these things that are going to be highly impactful for you to ultimately change your resilience to stress. Everything in life is a season. Sometimes we go through seasons of chaos, and sometimes we go through seasons of peace. And if you're in a season of chaos right now, like, to be honest, I am, it's okay to be stressed, but you got to build resilience into the system. Like, stress is something that exists in the environment, but it doesn't have to exist inside you. Your body can become very adaptive to that stress. If your aerobic fitness is great, you're going to be very adaptive to it. If you're sleeping well, you're going to be very adaptive to it, right? So look at all those things and lean in on them. Thompson, what you got, brother?
Just an observation, actually, talking about stress response and digestion and all that. I noted during the muscle camp week that, you know, we were working out pretty hard, like very, very hard, and eating right after, and then waiting a short while and getting back into it. But interestingly, at no point during that week did I feel gassy or bloated or like any indigestion. Everything was working really well. Back in the normal day-to-day life, you know, work stress, you chow down some food, and sometimes, yeah, you do feel that weird kind of like, you know, feeling. So what is that about? Like, is there a difference between the mental and the physical kind of like stress? Yeah,
for sure. So think of stress evolutionarily, right? Let's roll back a couple thousand years and we'll go, think of what would have been stressful a few thousand years ago. Would you have had more physical stress or more psychological stress? So if you roll back a couple thousand years ago, stress would have been, well, maybe the absence of food would be stressful. That's psychological. But in general, most stress would have been, I have to go kill this thing, or something's trying to kill me, or I'm physically laboring. So most of the stress historically for humans would be physical. So the body typically does better when stress is combined with movement, because it's evolutionarily has been, but now it's flipped. Now most of our stress is psychological and it's not coupled with movement. So we have this, we call like this metabolic disconnect. My brain is saying stress, and when my brain's saying stress, it's supposed to be involved in coupled with movement. Like, I should be stressed and moving, but I'm standing still, or I'm sitting in a car and I'm like, oh shit, I'm stressed. So your brain is going panic and your body goes I'm shutting down. So the more you can learn to, when you feel psychologically stressed, move your body, your digestion will continue to do what it's supposed to do. Movement is just so vital. That's why a lot of those points in there are movement based. Movement is very, very important to moving through stress. So when we're training and we're moving hard, you're basically just allowing your body to utilize the stress hormones, right? Your body utilizes cortisol, it utilizes the nutrients that you're dumping into the bloodstream, rather than just having them sit there and kind of wreak havoc. Yeah, Matt's just shared the 5-10-15-20 rule, which is from our friend Owen Lacey in Ireland. 5-10-20 is 5 deep belly breaths before starting to eat, 10 minutes, 10 seconds minimum of chewing per bite, 15-minute total eating window, and 20-minute walk post-meal. That's a great, thanks, Mont. That's awesome. I love that. I forgot about that. It's just basically introducing some type of mindfulness around eating, right? And so one of the things I say is, I've preached this for years, just do 5 breaths before you eat, man. Just 5 easy breaths, like extend the exhales. I've been, man, I strongly encourage all of you guys. I'll say, so in 2007 is really when my life started to shift around. Like, when I started to realize that I was the creator of my life and I'm in control of my life and my outcomes and my destiny. Not that long ago, right? Prior to that, I was very much a victim. I was very much unconscious, mindless. And I started reading one specific guy, and he really changed my life. And ironically, I started listening to him again over the last couple of weeks. And it's Dr. Wayne Dyer. And that's Dyer. He's passed away now, but any of his stuff, guys, if you can get your hands on it, The Wisdom of the Ages, this guy's just unbelievable. And he talks a lot about connecting to spirit, connecting to, this deeper source, this deeper sense. One of the interesting things that I'd never drawn the connection to, you've heard the term inspired, of course. We've also heard information. So if we look at the roots of those, inspired, the root of inspired is in spirit. And, so you're connected to spirit. So I'm living from an inspired place deep inside, from my soul, from my spirit. Information obviously is in form, in body, like in mind, in body. So rather than being in spirit, you're like being in form. I thought it was really, really interesting and powerful. So when I'm doing my meditation or my breath work before I eat, my goal is to connect with my soul, with my spirit, and welcome this food in to fuel this inspired journey that I'm tapping into, right, every day. I want to show up for you guys inspired. I want to show up for you guys. Like when I come up here, like you see, I don't have notes. I don't have slides. I come here and speak from my soul. I come here and speak from my heart. And hopefully it comes off authentically, and hopefully it comes off in a way that seems valuable. So for me, it's always like, how do we learn to connect in with our soul? So every time I sit down to eat, that's a really easy time to just listen to my soul, say, hey, welcome this food in to my cells, to fuel this mission, to fuel this inspired journey. Thanks, Mats. Mats are the man. Mats is doing cardio and finding stuff on Amazon. Appreciate you, man. So anyone else have questions? Does that feel like there's something of value there?
Ben, I think
I have
it'd
a
be
question.
Okay. Shuki.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think for me, what's really helped, like it's really interesting having it all in isolation. And I think you saying like pick two or three points is really interesting because I think part of it, thinking of it like treating the symptom, a lot of this is like treating the symptom. If you look at it in isolation and go, oh, I'm stressed, I'll do a sauna, oh, I'm stressed, I'll, eat better. But I think if you look at the cause, I think you can almost segregate this into a list. And I think the biggest one in terms of the cause is the clear goals and targets. I think any stress you can then put in context of, I'm going through this because, or in the bigger picture, it's not that bad. So I think it's really interesting. Like when you've said that, I'm kind of framing up, well, at the end of the day, the stress does come down to the path and the purpose and the goals. I think that's, unless there's someone with a knife in front of you, yeah, that's kind of a different kind of stress. But
You're right.
day-to-day stress, and then you can go, well, it's, the degree of how bad the cause is in terms of what it's doing to my goals kind of will be an instant fix without treating the symptom going. So appreciate that perspective. I think it's really interesting rather than grabbing a quick fix and going, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and it'll stop the stress here. You've actually got the looking at it from a causal perspective in terms of the goals is awesome. So
Yeah.
appreciate that. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Thanks, Keith. And I'll say the absence of goals is when people tend to live reactively, right? They tend to live their life just on the next hedonistic, instant gratification, right? So the next, how can I gratify myself now? And that in itself becomes stressful because you're going to become down on yourself. You're going to feel like you're doing all these hedonistic things that don't make you feel good about yourself long term and make you feel worse. And the absence of fulfillment is probably the single biggest stress people have in their life. They're like, am I doing the right things? Am I doing enough? Am I living the life I should be? That's this existential stress that most people just don't ever tap into. That's why I've become, I think I've always been a very spiritual person. But in the last, I don't know, probably 7 years, it's really accelerated for me, man, because you realize that a life well lived comes from inside. It's an inspiration. It's a light that comes from inside that there's no amount of external motivation that can find that for you or feel it the same way. So giving yourself time and grace to connect with your soul and like start to truly listen to who you are on the inside rather than what all the noise of the world is saying. And that we're so distracted. There's so much information, so much noise. And when I say noise, it's just like people telling you who you should be, what you should value, how you should live your life, how you should spend your money, what shoes you should wear. And you're like, I don't fucking give a shit about any of that. Like, what actually brings me fulfillment? Right? Like, I don't give a fuck what car you drive. If it's better than me and you want to measure dicks against me, good for you, man. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, I want to live my inspired life. And I think that's what's missing in so many men's lives when they're living these lives of quiet desperation. It's like, oh, my car is faster than yours. Like, I don't fucking care, bro. I'm happy. I'm fulfilled, right? I'm doing the things I love. Yeah, I don't need something outside of me to tell me that. I can, I know that in my soul. Somebody else had a question that I'm not sure who that was.
Ben, I was hoping you might expand upon how you use heart rate variability, resting heart rate, those different vital signs to measure stress and how you kind of implement those in your protocol.
Yeah, gladly, Josh. So for those of you that don't understand HRV, HRV is a proxy for resilience. How adaptive is my body, more or less? It's a generalization, but it's a good indication of how well my body is going to adapt to stress. So if I have a low HRV, that means my body tends to be less adaptive. It's going to take longer for my body to adapt. If I have a high HRV, my body's highly adaptive, which means it'll take less time for my body to adapt. So I don't necessarily use HRV to make decisions. So I don't necessarily change my training a lot based on HRV. I may change it a little bit, but it just gives me an indication of like, well, how long is it going to take me to recover? And so if I know if it's constantly trending down. So the way, basically coming back, the way I'll use HRV is in its trends. I don't compare against anyone else. I compare against myself. And if I see it's chronically trending down, it means I'm exerting or expending more than I'm recovering. So I have to look for new ways to intervene with recovery modalities. And sometimes that can be okay, right? If it's intentional, I'm intentionally exerting more than I'm recovering, because maybe I'm going to deplete it. I'm intentionally trying to deplete or cut or you know, put myself into some adaptive, deep level of adaptive state. And it's okay. But in general, we don't want an HRV that's chronically going down. We certainly also don't want an HRV that's chronically going up. Because if our HRV is chronically going up, that means we're probably not subjecting ourselves to enough training stress. It means the body can probably endure more training stress. So we want to see an HRV that, the best case scenario in my mind, this is a vast generalization, but the best case scenario in my mind, if I'm training 4 or 5 days a week on those training days, I actually want to see the HRV go down. Like after I'm done training, HRV should go down, but the next day it should go back up. Or it should never take more than 2 or 3 days for it to go back up. So if you guys are training chronically and it's like staying low, and then you take 2 days off and it goes back up, you're in a good spot. So I would just use HRV kind of as a proxy for how well recovered am I. And there's two, well, all of these interventions are going to positively impact HRV, but there's two ones that I lean in on specifically. There's a lot of them, but three that come to mind. Sleep is just non-negotiable for HRV. Breathing, parasympathetic breathing is non-negotiable, and aerobic fitness. Those are, I think, your three biggest levers for increasing HRV. Now, that being said, if your gut health is a mess, you're not going to have a great HRV. If you're low testosterone, you're not going to have great HRV. So there's other things that impact it as well. But in general, this list is, if you check boxes on most of those, your HRV will go up. But again, having higher HRV is not necessarily a goal. It's just a good indication that you can push harder in the gym. Your body's more adaptive and more resilient to stress. Does that help? So Josh, you also asked about resting heart rate, respiration rate. So respiration rate obviously is an indication of stress as well. If my respiration rate is going up, meaning I'm breathing more often every minute, it just generally says, hey, my body's probably stressed. My body's tight. Like muscle contraction increases the production of carbon dioxide, which increases respiration rate. So in general, the less I breathe a minute, in general, the less tension and stress I'll carry. So I'm always trying to train the ability to bring my respiration rate down. Now, it's very dependent on the strength of the diaphragm, right? The diaphragm has to be effective in actually pulling air in and expiring air out. And most people have a very underactive weak diaphragm. So your respiration rate can be high even if your stress levels are low. So there's some other nuance there. But in general, all of you guys, by the way, should be training your diaphragm every single day. The cool thing about the diaphragm is once you got it, you got it. At least I think for me, it's been like once I figured out how to do it, it's just a skill that I've got, like riding a bike. I'm like, oh, I can figure out how to use my diaphragm. Doesn't mean it's always at its peak condition, but I can always use it. Yeah, it's just like riding a bike or writing your name. Got to develop the skill. That's a big part of, you guys, when you start this coaching, there's two primary phases we put you guys through, phase one, phase two. So phase one, phase two, from our coaching perspective, is like building the skills you guys need to become more effective. Diaphragmatic control is a big, big component of that. Hopefully it helps, Josh.
Not very
Thank
long.
you. Appreciate it.
Pleasure, man. What else you got, boys?
Hey Ben, for you mentioned magnesium supplementation.
Yes.
I've heard that L-threonate biglycinate are good ones to focus on, especially for mental stress, because they cross the blood-brain barrier. Are there other types that you would want to focus on? Or, I mean, for stress or for any other reason.
Yeah, so 3 and 8, I tend to use at night. Like after this call, I'll probably use 600 milligrams of 3 and 8. I use 400 to 600 milligrams 1 to 2 times a day. Glycinate, I tend to use post-workout. Again, 400 to 600 milligrams for me. My body weight's a little bit higher. Glycinate for me just tends to, I think it helps with recovery at the level of muscles for me personally a little bit better. 3 and 8 tends to cross the blood-brain barrier more effectively, thereby modulating the central nervous system and mind and brain. The only other ones that I'd use from time to time are magnesium malate, which is subjectively supposed to have a better effect on muscular system, and then potentially magnesium citrate. The only time I usually suggest citrate is you got to be a little careful with citrate because it tends to be very good for bowel, well, let's say it's very good for bowel movements. So if you're backed up, if you are consuming lots of protein, if anyone you know is backed up, magnesium citrate would be the best one. It also has pretty decent absorption. But in general, I don't prioritize citrate, but I'll prioritize the other three. So malate and glycinate post-workout, and then either glycinate and threonate before bed. And man, I'll rotate through. Like I wouldn't say I'm super consistent. The only one I use consistently, I'd say, is 3 and 8, or I'll sometimes try to use a blend, which you guys know I use the Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. What's my thoughts on frequencies, specifically like healing with frequencies, Des, or like pulse electromagnetic frequencies, or what specifically?
Like kind of energy type frequencies. I've been kind of down a little bit of a rabbit hole with trying to channel it into the frequencies. Just when you talked about you're quite spiritual, I was just wondering what your thoughts were on the frequency side of things and like binaural beats and that kind of thing.
Oh man, so that's a really wide topic. So we're energetic beings. Like this isn't woo-woo science. This is fact. Everything we are is vibration and frequency, and so thereby it matters. It absolutely influences our health. A healthy cell will vibrate at a different frequency than an unhealthy cell. So I've been a user of different types of frequency for probably 50, no, God, longer, tw over 20 years. I used to use something called an FSM machine, a frequency specific microcurrent, when I was competing to enhance recovery. So now I use PEMF mats. There's another thing I have actually open on my computer here. I'll drop it in the box. The electroequoscope, which is non-invasive, non-chemical, individualized impedance response technology. Basically, they're using this to heal people. I was literally just looking at it yesterday. Drop it here for you guys to look at. So, frequency is the study of biophysics, right? So we're looking at physics is the study of ultimately the influence of vibration on the body, biophysics. And so this, most people in performance, they stop at the level of biochemistry. They think like biochemistry is it, right? So it's like molecules and supplements and food, but there's another level above that, which is even more influential on the human system. That's biophysics. So if you want to study this stuff, there's a few books I'd recommend.
Oh, cool.
There's a book called Healing is Voltage. Forget the guy's name. I forget right now. Yellow book, big book, really good book, great, great, great book. Yeah, Healing is Voltage. There's another book, Light Medicine, which is really great by Anna Maria Mahalsia. Just a few more that I can think of in frequency stuff. But if you read Healing is Voltage, it's a bit heavy, but pretty compelling. Yeah, those are the only ones that come to mind when that talk about like healing. Well, you could also look into all the Body Keeps the Score is another one by Wessel van der Kolk. That's another one that talks a little bit about vibration, frequency, and healing.
Cool. I'll add them to the list.
Yeah, Jerry Tennant is the guy who wrote Healing is Voltage. Oh, there you go, Russ. Thanks, Russ. Christian, I see you're new to the call, man. You want to unmute and ask any questions? Mats mentions you've got some nutritional things you want to focus on. If you're not able to unmute, you can drop any questions you have in the chat. So, stress from a nutrition perspective, actually, this is useful to know. Why do you think people generally reach for carbohydrates when they're stressed? Carbohydrates are actually really good when you're stressed. Carbohydrates tend to drop cortisol. So insulin and cortisol are inversely proportional. So as if your cortisol is going up and you eat carbohydrates, it'll block cortisol. I don't know if I said that wrong. So as cortisol goes up from stress, if I eat carbohydrates, cortisol goes down. So that's a useful thing to know. That's why people consume carbohydrates post-workout, by the way. Carbohydrates post-workout don't seem to do a lot for replenishing glycogen. Not more enhanced than any other time of the day, but it does seem to do an enormous amount for blocking cortisol. And cortisol can definitely blunt the recovery response. So definitely useful to take in. Actually, it seems like taking carbs pre-workout, which is totally against what I used to believe, seems to even be more effective to blunting the cortisol response, which you may or may not want cortisol. Cortisol can be useful depending on your level of, if it's chronically elevated, then you probably want to blunt it. Russ, I like this new look you got going on over there, man. Yeah, like you got some facial hair going on. I like it. Never mind, I see you wearing a hat. I can't hear you, brother. I see you've unmuted, but I can't hear you. I'm not sure why.
Sorry, I
Microphone?
forgot the old podcast microphone.
There you go.
Yeah, I actually just cut it all off today. I had the long Viking haircut and today just chopped it off, so
Oh,
something
man. Did
different.
you get a photo?
What's that?
You have photos of the long Viking hair?
Yeah, I'm sure I do.
I'll
I'm
check out
sure
your
I do.
social, man. I gotta
But
see it.
for martial arts and self-defense, long hair is not practical. So
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like, I'm done. It's a pain in the ass.
Oh, how you feeling, man? Everything great?
Feeling good, man. Feeling good. Thank you.
Anything we can support you with?
You're doing it. You're doing
Thanks,
it.
man.
This is all good information. Sorry, I had another meeting, so I was a little late getting into the call, but
Well, good, man. I appreciate you being here. So let's put you on the calendar for Costa Rica, brother. Let's make sure we make that happen, and
okay.
we'll figure out a way to get you teaching these guys.
Be a pleasure.
Gents, anything else I can support with, or let you get back to your regularly scheduled program? Good. Hopefully, this was in some way valuable for you guys. Did we create some value today? Got a little bit of info that was useful. And so my ask of you guys is get in the Telegram group, read the list, implement the list. You'll also notice the other document I put in there is why do I train? And I think you may find that interesting. And I encourage you to do one for yourself. The one I shared isn't complete for myself, but it was a start. And so my encouragement to you is like, model that second document. It's why I train. And I encourage you to get a deeper understanding of your why. And your why will be different at different phases. So it's okay that this season of life is about aesthetics, or the season of life is about fat loss, or the season of life is about confidence or overcoming fear and developing courage. All those are great. And but my encouragement to you is, we create this like group wide, hey, why do I train? And so if you're here next week, or when you're here next week, just maybe you'll have been asking you, hey guys, why do you train? Share your document with me. I'd love to see it. I was willing to share mine with you, so I'd love to see yours next week. Thanks, gents. Have a great one. I appreciate you all. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Ben.